Calculation, and you're still not listening. If the president won't listen, Congress must.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. This is the song that came to mind Thursday night watching the Obama-Hillary Love Fest in Los Angeles. Continue with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. Now, Bob, I feel the media gave...
Where the Democrats would kind of criticize him for not having really reached a conclusion on this, but I got the impression they really didn't want him to either, because if he were to have said the obvious, that the president violated the law here and, you know, broke the law, then that would force a series of actions. Either Mukasey would have to take action against the president somehow, by beginning a criminal investigation, at least involving his subordinates, and might well have to send a referral to Congress recommending impeachment, because that's what happens when a president commits felonies, or it's supposed to happen when presidents commit felonies. And so, and the Democrats don't want to deal with that either. They don't want to have to go through the process. House Speaker Pelosi's made clear that impeachment's off the table. Congressman Conyers, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which would handle impeachment, has made it clear he doesn't want to do it, feels it would be a politically dangerous, might boomerang against the Democrats.
I observed a Conyers interview. It wasn't mine, but John Elliott from Air America was at the conference I attended in Washington last week, and he got an interview with Conyers, and he asked him about impeachment, and it's the same circular argument. Oh, it's too late. Well, it wasn't too late. Well, a year ago, it could have been a distraction. The media might have turned on us. I mean, there are all these excuses, and I just find it so patronizing, even from people I respect. And there's a powerful tape that I saw on YouTube this week of a town hall meeting that Henry Waxman held in Los Angeles with a group of progressives, and they really socked it to him. I mean, they were very firm, and he basically just stood there, took the angry rhetoric from these people, and then just said, well, no, I don't support impeachment. And similarly, when he was asked about Sybil Edmonds and whether he would permit her to testify, he just said, no, I have no plans. But he wouldn't amplify on that. And the Democrats are just kind of stonewalling the left base of the party on these critical issues.
Well, in the piece I posted at ConsortiumNews.com, I point out that this was exactly what happened in 92 and 93 when, after Clinton beat Bush in that election, the Democrats essentially threw in the towel on a whole series of important investigations from Iran-Contra to Iraqgate to the October surprise issue later on, to the Contra drug issue, which came back up in the mid-90s. These issues where there was major evidence, a significant body of evidence, overwhelming evidence of Republican guilt, the Democrats, in this case largely the Clinton administration, chose not to pursue it. Yeah. And I think they're repeating that now in avoiding the impeachment battle with and the torture issue with George W. Bush.
Yeah. Bob Perry, thank you very much. Robert Perry at ConsortiumNews.com. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Peter.
You bet. Coming up next, a look at the startling decline in the salmon run on the West Coast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored by the makers of naturally derived Amil BP, clinically shown to help maintain healthy blood pressure. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. Science marches on, including medicine, of course. And every day, with great medical journals as the source, the news reports developments of one kind or another affecting everything and everybody and his brother. Some are major breakthroughs, but most are rather small, some unimportant and hardly worth mentioning at all. Yet science grows in increments, and sometimes worth relating simply because people find them simply fascinating. Today, it's not about some awful illness you might catch, but why it is for you and me that when we itch, we scratch. that compelling story after this for Emil BP. You know, over 70 million Americans deal with pre-hypertension. But let me tell you about this wonderful new product called Emil BP. It makes maintaining healthy blood pressure easy. Take it every day the way you take your vitamins. Emil BP uses a patented naturally derived ingredient called Emil peptide, clinically shown to help maintain a healthy blood pressure. Keep yours in a healthy range by eating right, exercising, and taking Emil BP. Never skip a meal. Available at Walgreens and CVS or visit EmilBP.com to find other fine retailers near you.
We're here with zinc and cardio, two nutrients from New Centrum Cardio, the only complete multivitamin that can lower cholesterol.
Hi there.
Hello.
Cardio, you're a phytosterol. What does that mean?
As a phytosterol, I'm the all-natural ingredient in New Centrum Cardio that can fight cholesterol. Benefits may be seen in as little as 4 weeks.
So cholesterol, if you're listening, you're going down.
New cholesterol-lowering Centrum Cardio, working better together.
From A
to zinc.
Comparison among leading brands. 400 milligrams free phytosterols taken twice daily as part of a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol may reduce the risk of heart disease.
There's a reason why we want to scratch, a simple reason, which is that we are programmed in our brains to scratch when something itches. A new study has been released from Wake Forest in Winston-Salem. Dr. Gil Yusupovich and his colleagues, therefore we hail them, they scratched 13 healthy people with a soft brush on the leg at 30-second intervals. To find some way to peg which parts of the brain the nerve's messages are catching to create the urge when something itches for us to begin scratching. They used functional magnetic resonance to determine which units of the brain feel pain and which determine itch. It turns out the anterior and posterior cingulate cortexes are parts that trigger this response in both the human sexes, scratching increased activity in the secondary pain centers and in the prefrontal cortex where compulsion often enters. Since the people were not scratching to an actual itch, this soft brushstroke there is an annoyance part of which people tended to continue after it was gone. So we learn something every day as science marches on. The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion. From an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
If you love salmon and you like to fish for salmon, pay attention this next half hour. There's been a dramatic decline in the salmon run as measured so far this year. We're going to talk about possible causes, what the impact will be. If you have a question or comment, you're always welcome to join us. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B.
I feel so extraordinary. Something's got a hold on me. I got this feeling.
We get two views on the salmon situation. Zeke Grader is executive director of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, which is the PCFFA, or something close to that. Zeke, welcome to our program today.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Does your organization turn into an acronym or just stay the way it is?
Well, it's pretty much we're staying the way it is, but I think we come back in another life. We're probably going to be the Fisherman's Liberation Front.
The FLF. I can handle that. That's got some zing to it. And also with us is Dick Poole. He's president and owner of Pro Troll Fishing Products and a great supporter of sport fishing on the West Coast. Dick, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be here.
Well, gentlemen, this is a very disturbing situation. The San Francisco Chronicle brought it to my attention a couple of days ago. But in the peak years, we've seen as many as 800,000 or more Chinook salmon run up the Sacramento and San Joaquin River systems. And the estimates this year put that number of adults returning at just 90,000. That's, just around 10% of the peak. And this is certainly quite alarming. Zeke, tell us what this means to the professional fishermen here on the Pacific Coast in California and Oregon.
Well, I think what it means is that we're going to have a very restricted season if we have a season at all. In fact, I think we're looking at if there's any fishing, it's probably going to be in the nature of doing some of our DNA genetic work, really not for any sort of production. And Dick can probably comment better on the recreational, but I don't think it looks any better for them either. Again, it's not the problem of either commercial recreational fishing that brought this on, but rather a combination of some poor ocean conditions, but for the Central Valley stocks, which account for 90% of California's salmon production and over half of Oregon and Washington's, I think the problem is fairly clearly that we've just taken too much water out of the system. That is, the estuary no longer works, and we've just entrained too many fish at the pumps and created really an ecological disaster and or collapse in our delta.
Now, Zeke, we've talked frequently in the last months about the Klamath River and the problems there with reduced runs, lower populations, and there are a bunch of hydroelectric dams that activists would like to see removed there. So water flows are a critical issue here, and we've seen, particularly under the Bush administration, diversions going to agribusiness much more than to protect the health of our rivers and the fish stocks therein. What is the situation in the San Joaquin and Sacramento rivers in terms of the water flows, and is there diversion to agriculture that is compounding these problems?
Well, I think you've hit it right on the head. I think Oscar Hammerstein probably said it best, fish gotta swim, and when you have systems that don't have any water in them or have the waters too low, they obviously don't survive. Certainly in the Central Valley and out of the Delta, where both the San Joaquin and Sacramento rivers flow into, it provides about 15 million people with their drinking water, plus provides most of the irrigation water for the San Joaquin Valley and much of the Sacramento. And we simply have taken out too much water out of the system, mostly for San Joaquin Valley agribusiness, some of it for crops such as cotton, which are very water intensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of that water now is going for development in Southern California, putting golf courses in deserts.
Yeah. Now, Dick Poole, from your perspective, do you see this, the river situation, is it a matter of the volume of water or the temperature of the water that affects the adults' abilities to swim upstream and spawn?
Well, Peter, the adults going upstream have a problem. The temperature in the river, if the water flows are wrong at certain times of the year, the adults won't move. They need cold water. They can't survive in water over for long periods of time over 57, 58 degrees. They need that cold water, and they need that water to spawn. If they move up and the water has been reduced, we saw this in the drought years where a lot of the streams were warm, there is no successful spawning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't think that's our current problem. I think the current problem is more related to the tiny smolts that are trying to come back down the river and never make it through the delta.
And is that because of the pumps and the dams, or exactly what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think our analysis is that, that parallel what Zeke says, the big change in the system over the last 5 or 6 years has been steady increases in the amount of water diverted from the delta. And when the tiny smolts, these smolts are 2-3 inches long, they're coming down, they have 100 miles of water to traverse through that delta.
Mm-hmm.
And if the water is moving south rather than west, first, a lot of them are simply entrained in the pumps and end up as fertilizer in a cotton field. Probably more serious than that is the plankton, the photoenzyme plankton that they feed on. These fish are tiny. They have no reserve fat. If there's not plankton in the water for them to eat, they starve, or they're quickly eaten by predators.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the main cause. The water is pulled so fast through the delta into the pumps, the plankton don't even have a chance to bloom.
Now, Zeke Grader, we have the issues of water diversions, pumps that kill the little critters, dams that can block access both up and downstream. What about the impact of global warming on the temperature of the Pacific? Is that a factor, in your opinion?
Well, certainly we're looking at global warming now, and it does exist. We're seeing problems already in the Bering Sea as a result of that, and other places around the globe. There certainly has been a change in upwellings this last year or so. So we haven't seen the amount of forage that we normally do. But then,
let's describe that for a moment. Upwelling is the currents that bring vegetation and other nutrient-rich materials up to the levels where these fish can access them.
That's correct. In other words, when you have strong upwellings, it feeds the base of your whole oceanic food system. It causes the planktonic blooms. And then from there, the smaller fish thrive on those, and then the larger fish. And so you'll have, say, something like salmon that will then be feeding on krill or anchovy, all of which in turn have fed on these smaller animals. So it's that upwellings that are so critical to our ocean productivity, and there has been weaker upwellings in the last couple of years. Certainly that's true, and some warmer water. Whether or not that's attributable to global warming or not, I don't know. And certainly we are cognizant of global warming and are concerned about what impact it might have. But I think with the Central Valley stocks, well, they might have been impacted by these oceanic conditions, as were other Pacific salmon runs. We've seen a drastic decline in the Central Valley stocks. The decline's far greater than any other place along the coast, and I think fairly clearly it's that we've had record levels of diversions. Keep in mind the fish that came back this year went out of the system the way Dick was describing in 2005. And that year, our state was diverting 6.4 million acre feet of water out of this system to the farms in the San Joaquin Valley and to development in Southern California. That was a record level. And then, of course, this last year we saw 7 million acre feet of water being diverted. This is massive amounts of water. It can oftentimes amount to over half of the inflow into the delta. And if you don't have that fresh water mixing with the salt water, you lose your estuary, the effect of the estuary and the health of the estuary. And that's when the salmon that rely on estuaries before they go to sea, if they don't have a healthy environment there, they don't survive.
That's Zeke Grader, Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. Dick Poole is with us from ProTroll Fishing Products. We're talking about the sharp decline in the salmon run that has been determined recently. It's at roughly 10% of the peak, and the peak was in, I've got to look at this bar graph, it looks like about 2003, 2004, Zeke?
That's correct. That's when we had about 800,000 fish returning to the river. Now, keep in mind that's about four times of what we set as our spawning escapement goal. Part of that was because the fishing was a little bit lighter than those years. But realistically, we should be this last year we probably should have seen 900,000 fish come back to the river because the effect of our fisheries had been so curtailed because of what happened in the Klamath. Both most all of the commercial and much of the recreational had been restricted. So we should have been looking at really record numbers returning. Instead, we're getting these very, very dismal numbers. And it's, like I say, it's not related to fishing, but quite clearly something in the environment. And with the these particular stocks, it looks clearly like it's related to those record levels of diversions.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about the economic impact, both on professional fisher persons and also on sport fishers, fishermen. I guess we have to broaden that out now to be politically correct. But first, Tom joins us from Coos Bay, Oregon. Welcome, Tom. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Zeke and Dick.
Oh, hi, Peter. Timely subject. I'm talking to you about 20 yards from a salmon spawning stream right at the moment.
Really? Describe it for us.
It's a fairly good coastal stream here near one of the estuaries of Coos Bay. It's usually very productive. We produce quite a few. So far this year, I don't think I've seen 5 salmon total, and only 2 adults, and neither one of them managed to find each other to mate. It's almost a complete wipeout this year. I wonder if they got any reports out of Oregon like that.
All right, Zeke first.
We've heard that the runs have been down, and not quite as far down as you've said. Like I said, earlier, the runs along the Pacific generally this year have been down, and we're still trying to determine how drastic, but most returns, the reports that we've gotten indicate that there's been a decline, but nothing as dramatic as what we've seen in the Central Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what I was curious of when I was talking with the people who do fish survey here. They confirmed that they've been seeing that on a number of the small streams around here. I mean, and we don't have any of the problems that you're talking about in terms of the valley. Nothing has changed radically here. It's just that no fish are returning.
Now, Tom, let me just ask you, I'm curious, how do you see these fish? They don't just jump up and say, hi, we're here to spawn.
Well, it's actually quite easy. It flows through my property. The creek is not that deep.
Mm-hmm.
We're outside frequently. It's pretty easy to see them. Plus, when the salmon make their rest, their nest, it's distinctive. There's a depression in the gravel that stands out. You can tell that it's freshly disturbed gravel, and there are no reds anywhere on this creek that I've seen yet.
Very interesting. Dick, do you have any comment?
Well, I can't comment, Peter, directly on that situation, although one of the things you do see with salmon historically is the counts will cycle up and down periodically. As Zeke mentioned, sometimes ocean conditions, sometimes spawning conditions will cause a problem for a run or a combination of runs over time. The one thing, I think what we're seeing, though, described earlier, is an unprecedented change that doesn't fit any pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Salmon do have the ability, if the habitat is right, to respond rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They have been brought back, kind of interesting, in the Sacramento River system, peaking that 800,000. That wasn't an accident. There was $1 billion spent on river improvements, mainly because of the endangered winter run, and it helped all the runs until this most recent problem, which most of us attribute to the Delta situation.
All right, we're going to take a break and return. That's Dick Poole, Pro-Troll Fishing Products. Zeke Grader is with us from the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. Tom, thanks for the call. And that the postcard description there, I'd love to come and visit your property there in Coos Bay. Sounds like a beautiful spot. We're going to take a break and return. The switchboard is jammed, so we'll get to as many calls as we can. Straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hi there, KRXA listeners. This is Hal on behalf of the Central Avenue Bakery. Tina and her staff want to thank all of you for becoming regulars at the Central Avenue Bakery at 173 Central Avenue in beautiful Pacific Grove. February is a special month at the Central Avenue Bakery as they celebrate Valentine's Day with an Italian buffet and a free glass of wine with every dinner. Space is limited, so make your reservations for Valentine's Day now. Then, at the end of February, Central Avenue Bakery celebrates its third anniversary with live music, free food, and prizes. Enjoy organic foods, pastries, and coffee. They also have a gluten-free menu and many organic gluten-free pastries. Stop by one of my favorite restaurants, the Central Avenue Bakery in Pacific Grove, today.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll try to provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your co-host, along with Mark Leonard. We try to look at current issues from a unique angle and invite our listeners to call in and bring their own different perspective on contemporary affairs. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Yes, but can you swim upstream? That's a tune from the Four Tops out of the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Music Archives, about 1970. It's called Still Waters Run Deep. We're talking about the waters in the San Joaquin-Sacramento River systems. Are they hospitable to returning Chinook salmon? Estimates show about one-tenth of the peak population from 3 or 4 years ago. And we're talking with Zeke Grader from the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and Dick Poole from Pro Troll Fishing Products. And gentlemen, if you could quickly, because I got a bunch of callers here, give us an estimation of the losses, first Zeke, to commercial fishermen from a cancellation of the salmon season, if that's what happens this year.
Well, just to our fishermen alone, this is just income to the fishermen, we're probably looking at the neighborhood of $60 to $100 million. Now, the actual impact on the businesses and others that rely on these fish is probably going to be much greater. I think the price here, though, is it goes beyond just dollars and cents, as I think Dick can describe in recreational. In some ways, there's no way to put an economic value on having a good, fresh, locally caught salmon, nor is there any sort of way you can put a value on a family taking a child for their first salmon fishing trip.
Yeah. Well, I refuse to eat farmed salmon, so if you cancel the season, I'll either have to go to the freezer or just have another kind of fish. Dick, your reaction on the cost here?
The impact is devastating, Peter, on the recreational fishery. People don't realize how huge it is. There are 2.4 million recreational fishermen in California. When you walk down the street, one in six of the people you pass has a fishing license.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge number of these fish for salmon and our other fisheries in the estuary. And it already has had a huge impact on retailers, on charter operators, on businesses like ours. We're heavily involved in products to the salmon industry, so it's a big-time problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take some more phone calls right now. Up next, Matt in Sacramento. Go right ahead, Matt.
Yeah, well, we'll make it quick. I was curious, do you have any idea the effect of when warmer water can't hold as much oxygen as colder water? Is this going to start affecting fish like cold water, fish like salmon?
All right, Zeke, you want to try for that?
Sure. Actually, that's a good question, because one of the first measures we took to try and save the winter-run salmon that also had benefit to the fall run that we're talking about right now was putting in a cold water a temperature control device at Shasta Dam to make sure that we had cold water in the river. Water temperatures over a certain level in these rivers, these spawning rivers, can be lethal to the salmon. Generally, they look at around 57 to 60 degrees as being the threshold, and we can try and shoot for colder water. And when they take this much water out of the system, as you draw down a system, you have less water, and it tends to warm up much more quickly, and that, too, can be deadly to the fish.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Great question. Appreciate it. Now to Monterey, listening to KRXA. It's Ernie. Welcome, Ernie.
Hi, guys. Hey, I'm in agriculture, and I know that it's darn hard in this day and age to really make a profit. It's very competitive, very hard to make money. And I understand why the growers in the San Joaquin Valley are taking the money. They're buying like about an acre foot, I believe it's like for about $53, and then they're able to resell it for $200. And I can see the logic in them trying to make a profit because it's tough, but somehow I just don't see how they should have that ability to do that, because doesn't it just compound the problem for the fishermen? When you put money in the equation, boy, things can get out of whack quick, and is my math correct?
Okay, Dick, do you have a comment?
I agree that something's wrong there. There's a lot of crops that are water intensive, and I don't know. We have to reorder our priorities in the state of California.
All right, let me turn quickly to Zeke here, because this water is subsidized. That's why it's so cheap, and then they resell it essentially on the open market. That seems like something we ought to tighten up a loophole on, Zeke.
Well, we certainly have to. In other words, these people have been, in fact, the caller is exactly right. It's in fact, in some cases, the delivered price was as low as $9 an acre foot. To get it that low for agriculture, it has to be subsidized. And, of course, I think the purpose originally when we put these projects in was noble. We wanted to provide for and maintain our farms. The problem is this system has been horribly abused. And now we see some of these water districts and farmers turning around and wanting to sell this water to urban areas or to developers, and at very high rates. Mm-hmm. And this is water that basically we need to be going back into the streams, particularly if they're not going to be using it for raising crops.
Ernie, great question. Thanks for the call. John in Carmel Valley, I got about 40 seconds. Go.
The whole project was built wrong. They should have built a canal instead of pumping water from the delta uphill to the south end of the valley in Southern California. They could have built a canal at a higher elevation completely around the Central Valley and brought the two ends of it to the delta.
All right,
never had to pump a drop.
Let me ask Zeke about that. Do you agree, Zeke?
Well, I you know, we needed to provide for agriculture. I'm not an engineer. I'm not going to... I can't comment one way or another on what's been said. All I know is that we've got too much water being taken out of the system. We could make some much greater savings in agriculture, and we could make some greater savings by doing water reuse and better conservation.
That's all right, gentlemen. Identified. My time is up. I want to thank John there for calling. My thanks to Zeke Grader from the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and Dick Poole from Pro Troll Fishing Products. Great to talk to you, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
Coming up next, Professor Chalmers Johnson returns to our program. Permanent bases and status of forces agreements next.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines, that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered, to my extreme surprise, that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
17,000 jobs gone.
This is a very worrying signal.
An internet takeover bid. This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. A Labor Department report says the American economy lost 17,000 jobs in January, another sign that we're sliding toward recession, if not already in one. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason covers the economy.
For a while now, the worry has been that if the housing crisis were to take the entire economy down, the place you'd see it would be in the job numbers. Well, now it looks like we are seeing it there. We're losing jobs. That's the kind of thing that usually only happens in a recession.
Mortgage brokers and real estate firms cut jobs last month. So did factories, construction companies, even government. President Bush, speaking in Kansas City today, said the first job losses in 52 months are a serious sign the economy is weakening.
So the question is, what do we do about it? Does government have a responsibility? And if so, what is it? I do think government has a responsibility. I think government can take decisive action to help us deal with this period of uncertainty.
He urged the Senate to work through the economic stimulus bill as quickly as possible. Now this.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes. What do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures. But I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents A Word from Your Tires.
Sir, I think I speak for the four of us when I say that we do not support your current errand.
Well, we're going to the tire store. You guys are tires.
Head to the dealership.
Well, at the tire store, you can see your buddies.
We don't associate with off-brands. Your dealer has name brands. Michelin, Continental, Goodyear.
Enough.
I don't think they carry that one.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
Apparently concluding that it can't compete with Google, Microsoft, in third place in the Internet search market, is offering $44.6 billion for number two, Yahoo. Harry First of New York University Law School says a Microsoft-Yahoo merger would raise antitrust issues.
Standard economic theory is that when you have fewer competitors, there's less competition, not more.
Yahoo shares rose more than $9 today, while Microsoft lost $2. The high price of oil means big bucks for oil companies. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christopher says ExxonMobil earned nearly $1 billion a week last year.
These results from ExxonMobil are jaw-dropping. $40.6 billion in annual profit. That is a record for any U.S. company. And it's really no surprise when you think about how crude prices were at historic record highs for most of 2007, hovering around $90 a barrel, and the fact that most of the nation was paying over $3 a gallon for gasoline.
Today, the price of oil slipped to $88.96 a barrel. A terrorist with a keyboard could do more damage than a terrorist with a bomb. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports the government is launching a classified effort to detect and prevent hacker attacks on U.S. computer systems.
The president is expected in his budget request to ask for $6 billion, that's billion with a B, just to get started. And by some accounts, this program, the Cyber Defense Initiative, could cost up to $20 billion going forward. So this is potentially a very big deal.
Terrorists aren't the only concern. Foreign governments, notably China, have hackers probing computer networks at the Pentagon, the Department of Homeland Security, and other agencies. A federal jury in Ocala, Florida, has found actor Wesley Snipes guilty of failing to file a tax return, but acquitted him on more serious charges of tax fraud and conspiracy. Outside the courthouse.
This has to be a good feeling.
It does feel good. It feels great. It feels fantastic.
Snipes could still face up to 3 years in prison. The government says he used elaborate measures to avoid taxes on income of about $32 million. The parents of Britney Spears went to court in Los Angeles today, and her father, James, was named her temporary conservator. That means he'll handle her affairs while she's hospitalized, reportedly for psychiatric evaluation. A spokesman for actress Eva Mendez, star of Training Day and Ghost Rider, confirmed today that she's at a rehab facility in Utah. He says her problems aren't critical, but she felt she needed some outside professional support. Once again, the snowplows are out in Chicago. The storm system moving east has buried much of the nation's midsection in heavy, wet snow. In the Cascade Mountains of the Pacific Northwest, up to 6 feet of snow has fallen since Monday, and it hasn't stopped yet. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Joan!
There's a good reason more people prefer the ease and convenience of Listerine Whitening Quick Dissolving Strips over the leading competitive strip.
Joan, even in there for a long time,
you don't have to live in the bathroom.
The kids miss you.
Listerine Whitening Strips dissolve. No mess, nothing to remove.
Summer was beautiful. The dog had pups.
Listerine Whitening Strips mean noticeably whiter teeth or your money back. So come on out.
Is your name Mommy?
Another easy way to a noticeably whiter smile is Listerine Whitening Pre-Brush Rinse.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your oil change sticker.
I've been in the sun too long. I think I'm peeling.
No kidding. How come?
Hello? Maybe you're overdue for an oil change at the dealer.
Oh, right. How about that?
Well, you know what? I should have written out the date or mileage to remind you. Oh, wait. I did.
All right. Time to go to the dealer.
Good idea. And don't worry about me. I'll be fine on your windshield for the next 5,000 miles.
See? Everybody wins.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Chalmers Johnson joins us this half hour. We're going to talk about permanent bases in Iraq and a status of forces agreement, too.
I can't take it no more.
That's an angry man with a guitar, John Fogerty of Creedence fame. He can't take it no more. A little later this hour, Eric Bollert will join us from Media Matters for America. We'll talk about the Democratic debate and other media issues. Chalmers Johnson is Professor Emeritus from the University of California at San Diego. He got 3 degrees at UC Berkeley. He's written prolifically, and most recently a trilogy in the Blowback series. The most recent is now out in paperback called Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. Professor, thanks for coming on the show again today.
But it's a great pleasure to be back. Thank you.
Nice to talk with you, sir. And I reviewed your book again last night, and I wanted to focus on the chapter about U.S. military bases in other people's countries.
Right.
And in particular, this week, the president, who delivered a State of the Union message complete with a sermon to Congress about following the rules on earmarks, that very day he signed the defense authorization bill that he had previously pocket vetoed over another issue. But when he did so, he issued one of these cross your fingers signing statements. And of the four issues that he basically said he would choose not to follow, included investigations into contractors and war profiteering. But the most significant was that he once again penciled out, in his mind at least, a ban on a permanent military base or bases in Iraq. And the Congress has imposed this in repeated legislative attempts over the last few years.
It's the third time now.
That's right. And so what is your take on this move? And then we'll kind of zoom out and look at the larger picture of U.S. bases around the world.
Well, it's simply unbelievable. I mean, this is the line item veto has been ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. The law has already been signed. Therefore, is a law. It's as unconstitutional an act as one can imagine. It's about as bad as this president going around saying, I am the decider. One of the things about this country is we don't have a decider. We produce compromises between three co-equal branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
But it's simply outrageous. The Congress has gone out of its way and received very good advice from a lot of different people that Iraq and the Iraqis are strongly anticipating a statement by the Americans disavowing imperialist intent. He's never done so. Our chief advisor, back to the old Bremer viceroy set up in Iraq, went out of his way to say it was extremely important to get over to the Iraqis that we were not there forever, that these bases we've been building in Balad Air Base and Camp Victory and Al-Assad and things of this sort, even though we've poured simply unimaginable amounts of concrete and Kellogg Brown and Root have built these things up so that we're there for the really the very long haul, there's no question that the president is simply going ahead and doing what he, Dick Cheney, and a few other neoconservatives who've been thoroughly discredited wanted to do all along, which was to make Iraq a new part of the American empire of military bases.
Mm-hmm. And, Professor, in the book you describe that there are essentially three types of bases in the Pentagon vernacular. There is the main operating base, or an MOB, a forward operating site, an FOS, and then lily pads. Let's let's define those for our listeners.
Well, the first type are the big bases, Ramstein Air Base, Kadena Air Base in Okinawa, Aviano Air Base. They're huge. Often they amount to small cities with 20 or 30,000 people on them. They have schools for the dependents. Dependents are welcome on these bases. They're as permanent as any kind of colony could be, sort of American versions of Gibraltar. There's 35 of these. They're spread all around the world, and they are the bedrock of our operations.
And
the second type.
Let me just pause there for a second, because what I've heard is overall they're described as some 12 to 14 sites that could be permanent U.S. bases in Iraq. How many of those would you characterize as MOB's main operating bases?
Four.
Okay.
And that's omitting the new U.S. embassy, which is bigger than the Vatican, and things of that sort.
Okay.
But there are at least four of them Balad Air Base north of Baghdad is actually busier. The only airport on Earth that's busier than it is Heathrow in London.
Really?
And it is the main base for our air operation, which are almost never reported in the press, but the bombs being dropped on civilians unable to protect themselves are simply mind-boggling.
Yes. Now, the next type is the forward operating site. Describe those and how many, roughly, you think
and
are in Iraq.
And they're essentially the same thing as the big fundamental bases like Ramstein, except for one thing. They have no dependents. They have troops rotating in and out. They are military bases that are in full-time operation. They do not have schools, medical facilities for dependents, and things of that sort.
All right. And then the third type, the smaller, more nimble base, is called a cooperative security location, and the shorthand for that is a lily pad.
Right. The cooperation is in the eyes of the Americans. The people on the receiving end don't have really much choice. These are pre-positioned munitions. They've been built up in fairly large amounts of bombs, gasoline, things ready to go to war. They have a small skeleton force to keep them in use, to keep them up to date, to do maintenance, but that in times when they are to be used for operations, you can fly in very quickly special forces or whatever they may be. They can rearm there. They can get some of their heavier weapons and go into battle.
Mm-hmm. And so, Professor Chalmers Johnson, what is your sense of the real intention of the Bush administration, given your knowledge, given this signing statement just this week, they're really determined to establish very long-term sites and facilities in Iraq.
Well, let's talk more generally just about this for a moment. In talking about these types of bases, the nomenclature sounds all very Pentagon-esque and military, and it makes sense. The truth of the matter is most of these bases are left over from earlier American wars, particularly World War II and Korea. We still have 36 bases in the small Japanese island of Okinawa. There hasn't been any kind of military engagement in Okinawa since the Battle of Okinawa of 1945. But we're still located there. The 3rd Marine Division lives more comfortably there than they would in Oceanside, California, next door to Camp Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
These are imperialist enclaves, is what we're talking about. They're ways of penetrating an area, maintaining hegemony, exercising our influence, showing the flag. And again, it ought to be stressed that in well over 130 countries around the world, foreigners who come in contact with Americans, they don't come into contact particularly with diplomats, with businessmen, with students, not even with tourists, but they come in contact with our 18 to 24-year-old heavily armed young men who haven't a clue where they are, who've been propagandized to believe that they are doing good at the point of an assault rifle. And that's really what we're talking about here, is our particular form of empire. It's much more like the old Soviet empire and its satellites in East Europe than it was like the British Empire with its colonies around the world.
Professor, in the book, in Table 1, you show an estimate of 737 known bases, but you you detail in the text that the Pentagon doesn't include Iraq, Afghanistan, and many current operational zones, and that you think the total is somewhere over 1,000.
Well, I do. Moreover, those numbers were for 2006. We now have the base structure report, 2007 out. The numbers have grown to well over 800. And they're very euphemistic. That is to say, these are genuine military bases. You don't want to kid yourself that these are just Marine guards for embassies, as some characters like to say, or things of that sort. They're full-time active duty bases. They're unimaginably expensive. They contribute almost nothing to the national security of the United States. We could probably fulfill whatever obligations and needs we have to international peacekeeping and things of that sort around the world with maybe 35 such bases, not over 800. This is modern imperialism, and it's not only infuriating to most of the rest of the world, it's why we have now won the extremely dubious status of easily the most hated nation on Earth,
mm-hmm.
but it's also this empire is in the process very nearly of bankrupting us.
Yes, sir.
On Monday, we will get the new defense budget for 2009. It will scare you. It will be around $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
That's $1,000 billion more than every other nation on Earth spends on military affairs combined.
Right. Chalmers Johnson is with us, and his newest book is Nemesis. It's now out in paperback. It's part of a trilogy subtitled The Last Days of the American Republic, and it is a part of the American Empire Project, which is edited by Tom Engelhart, a friend of our program, and I encourage you to read it. It's a very powerful book. Professor, we're going to take a break and return, and during the break, we'd like to reconnect with you. The phone line we have is a little bit thin. It's a little noisy. So
it is a little thin, and so I'll hang up and let you call me back.
Very good, sir. We'll do that right during the break. And we'll take your calls. If you have a question or comment for Professor Johnson, call us now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years.
and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Cynthia from Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor, Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Checking traffic on KRXA. It is brought your way by Macy's. Check out Macy's this weekend where the clearance savings just keep getting better. Save on fashions and accessories for him, for her, and for the home. Taking a look at traffic, you're going to find it slow and go, as you oftentimes find it in Carmel. Northbound Highway 1 at Carmel Valley Road, it's an accident. A big rig with an overturned trailer is partially blocking the right lane. The left lane of eastbound Carmel Valley Road itself is actually blocked. The CHP is on the scene, but that is a major problem. The Fishhook also continues to be slow as you make that transition from southbound 17 over to southbound Highway 1. And in Santa Cruz, northbound Highway 1 at the Emmeline Avenue off-ramp, you're going to find that closed through the summer. That is for road work, and that's starting to stack up traffic. That's traffic on KRXA.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show, 23 minutes after the hour. Chalmers Johnson's latest book is Nemesis. It's out in softcover paperback for bargain price. I can't even find it here on the cover, but it's a very good value. I encourage you to pick it up and read it. And, Professor, before we move on from bases, just one more question, and it's not a real big one, but I was stunned to read in your book that many of our bases around the country have slot machines.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And that this is a huge revenue center for the Pentagon.
Has been for a long time. They regularly show up corruption scandals of one kind or another, taking down various officers. Ramstein Air Base in Germany is loaded with them.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's they're a little bit like Indian reservations.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, again, to stress, what we're talking about here is the inescapable accompaniment of imperialism,
mm-hmm.
namely militarism, which is militarism is not national security or things of that sort. It's a way of life.
Yeah.
It's people have an interest in being in the military, which is, of course, today not an obligation of citizenship. It's a career choice.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about SOFAs. This is not a piece of furniture. It's a status of forces agreement. And there's grave concern among Democrats in Washington that the Bush administration is going to negotiate a long-term lease, an SOFA, with the puppet government in Baghdad and tie the hands of future presidents.
That's what they're trying to do. General Petraeus has come out and said, we call it a SOFA, that we're not going to enact this as a treaty, which the terms of it so far look everything like they require a treaty, but a treaty would, of course, require Senate confirmation, which Bush almost surely couldn't get. So they're trying to sneak it through as a SOFA. SOFAs are something that are mysterious and most people have never heard of and don't know anything about. This is the real content of American imperialism. Our presence in, as I say, some 800 military bases around the world is based on two documents, documents that are negotiated by our embassies. The first is a general, usually short, maybe 10 articles, agreement, like, say, the Japan-American Security Treaty that says we have common interests in mutual security, and that we will give the Americans territory in Japan to use for security purposes.
Mm-hmm.
These things are written in the clear. They're translated into the local language accurately and pleasantly. They're widely available. The SOFA, by contrast, is something negotiated separately. It is usually very long, many different articles. Numerous foreigners around the world have complained that they're almost impossible if you are a citizen of the country in which these Americans are uninvited guests, to get a copy of it, or certainly to get a copy in your language that's legible. I've tried to look at the one in Japanese. I've studied Japanese most of my life, but I'll tell you, it's about as unintelligible as a ancient Buddhist text.
Mm-hmm.
These things lay out...
But, sir, let me jump in with a quick question. If, in fact, Bush negotiates a SOFA with Iraq,
yes.
and it's not submitted for Senate approval in a treaty fashion,
right.
would it then be something that the next executive could simply amend or terminate?
I think he could throw it out.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're sitting around. That is to say, daily, Bush throws up constitutional questions. And one of the big mysteries of our time is why the Congress doesn't react.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably the greatest damage the military-industrial complex has done to our country, to our constitutional system, is the almost total corruption of the Congress. The Congress has a responsibility that is simply unimaginably important, and that's to exercise oversight over this fantastic amount of money we spend on national security in this country.
I certainly share that concern. Professor, less than a minute remaining. I wanted to find out if you've had a chance to read Naomi Klein's new book, The Shock Doctrine.
I not only have read it, there's an endorsement on the back of it by me.
Oh, I didn't see the blurb.
Yeah.
Well, then give me 30 seconds of your thoughts on her work.
Well, I think it's an extremely creative, original approach to... The kind of cul-de-sac that we've worked ourselves into, that we've allowed these military adventures to go a long ways toward corrupting our political system. It is not at all clear the political system got ourselves into this fix. It's not at all clear that it can correct it, that this election may or may not get us a pleasant person as chief executive officer. It's not at all clear that they're going to be able to control any of these things we're talking about. I give Naomi Klein huge credit for genuine innovation.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today. I'd love to talk with you again.
Nice to be on your program. Thank
Chalmers
you.
Johnson, pick up Nemesis, now in paperback.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Debate from Hell. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It was billed as the Obama-Clinton debate. Barack Obama was there. Hillary Clinton was there. But the debate was not there.
Senator Clinton, that's a clear swipe at you.
Really?
We're having such a good time.
We are.
Poor CNN. Poor Wolf Blitzer. Trapped in a churning cauldron of harmony.
I asked Barack to join with me on legislation, which he has agreed to do, to prevent President Bush from committing our country to an ongoing presence in Iraq.
Even a beautifully loaded question on how Mrs. Clinton would control her husband was reduced to a mutual valentine.
Both Barack and I have very passionate spouses.
A desperate Wolf Blitzer did all he could to push them back into the ring.
Wolf, you keep on trying to
find out what you mean.
And finally, the audience turned on him.
So what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you were naive in trusting President Bush?
No, that's not what you hear me say.
He finally had no choice but to join the bizarre love cult.
Would you consider an Obama-Clinton or Clinton-Obama ticket?
Hillary would be on anybody's shortlist.
Well, I have to agree with everything Barack just said.
Maybe a flex-time job-sharing arrangement where everybody gets to be president.
There isn't anything we can't do if we put our minds to it. And the world will
live. Now this.
So, hon, how do you want your hair done?
Oh, I just want to try something really different.
Okay, well, if we trim your disorganized finances, layer your expenses, and give your late invoicing some body, you'll look just like a movie star.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily handle routine chores, like organizing finances and tracking expenses, so you can get back to what you do best.
You are a stylist, aren't you?
Award-winning.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay basketball. Hi, this is Rob Pott, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
The Otter Kelt Bed is busy at week's end. On Friday, Cal Poly Pomona comes to town to visit the Otters. Saturday, CSU San Bernardino will face off with the Otters. Game time, 7:30 p.m. Go Otters!
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it 5 times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Everybody's watching TV, except people smart enough to unplug. But who's watching the people who decide what comes on your boob tube, huh? Media Matters, that's the answer.
From the heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell. Shed fire in a soul, it was easy to see how the devil himself could be pulled out of me. There were drums in the air as she started to dance. Every soul in the room keeping time with her hands. And we sang, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. And a voice in his rang like the angels sing. Sing it, hey.
34 minutes into the hour. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Eric Bowler joins us today from Media Matters. They're on the web at mediamatters.org. Hey, Eric.
Peter, how are you?
Doing okay, and you?
Good, thanks.
Nice to talk with you again.
Yeah.
Lots to cover. I wanted to start with the column that you recently posted at Media Matters about the competition between Fox and CNN, and you have some sharp criticisms of the Fox News Channel, Kel Surprise. But the interesting thing is that despite all the pandering they do and all those whooshes and all of the X-rated B-roll that they run, that Fox News Channel's viewership is slipping.
Well, yeah, particularly when it comes to the political coverage. You know, as I said, when the Republicans catch a cold, everyone at Fox News gets sick. You know, Fox News clearly went all in on the Bush administration, crossed all sorts of lines in terms of journalism, really became a de facto broadcasting partner with the White House. Now you've got a Bush presidency, which is, you know, essentially in complete collapse. You've got a Republican Party that is not creating the kind of enthusiasm that the Democrats are. And so if you look at the ratings for debate nights and primary returns, CNN is just really cleaning their clock. If you look at the debate just the other night in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. that was 8 million viewers for CNN, the most watched primary debate in cable news history. CNN now has the top five rated debates of the primary season. And the reason is Democrats locked out Fox News, if you remember, last spring.
Right.
Democrats said, we're not going to be on any debates sponsored by Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely freaked them out, and now we know why, because they saw what was going to happen to the ratings come primary season.
Well, I think it's interesting. I've been sharply critical of CNN for the manner in which they've conducted the debates. The YouTube debate really was insulting. And with the Republicans in particular, they have hyped immigration and disproportionate to its importance, I think, in the campaign this year. But with that as backdrop, I give them high marks for the Thursday night Democratic debate, the one-on-one with Obama and Clinton. I think it was conducted with dignity. I think that they avoided the gotcha questions and the real smarmy stuff. And I think the candidates took advantage of the situation. And I was just so pleased. I'm not Hillary Clinton's biggest fan, but I thought she was remarkable. And I give her high marks for her performance. And I think that Obama was really on his best game as well.
Yeah.
And I think I'm glad that they got 8 million viewers because 8 million people saw something with some substance. And not just this back and forth BS.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, we've been doing this. This campaign has been going on literally for 52 weeks now on the Democratic side. And we really did, as you say, last night was really what, unfortunately, we wish it was always like. You had two good Democratic candidates talking substance, but not in a dry, boring way. Very entertaining. 90 minutes, just the two top contenders. You had a debate that was focused mostly on interesting questions, did not have, you know, Tim Russert or doing his gotcha stuff.
Yeah, they didn't bring out any old videotapes to embarrass somebody.
Not trying to spark another, you know, race confrontation for the first 20 minutes the way mm-hmm. Williams and Russert did at the last NBC debate.
Yeah.
It really was sort of a shining moment.
I can't extend the same praise to the Republican debate the very night before on the very same network.
One of the few Republican debates I really saw a very large portion of, and it really was unwatchable at times.
Yeah,
I thought Romney was just dreadful. McCain had a smirk on his face for about 2 hours. Huckabee and Paul really weren't allowed to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you compare and contrast, you know why Democrats are so enthusiastic about the fall campaign.
Well, and contrast the locations, just the way they used the venue as a way to exhume the ghost of Ronald Reagan, as if, you know, he's still a player in politics in America today. And the Democrats, to their credit, you know, they used a neutral site, the Kodak Theater. Good venue, is loaded with Hollywood liberals, and that's fine. But we didn't have that same context and framing that the Republican debate provided and that CNN willingly extended, you know, with the Anderson Cooper interview with Nancy Reagan before the event, and of course everything's with the old Air Force One behind him. I mean, the whole imagery and all of it is really stacked.
You know what I thought was the most interesting? I didn't see anything on this, but I was certainly struck by, you know, the debate was either, you know, from 8 to 10, they did some post-game, and then Larry King at 11, rather than continue talking about politics, they had a 60-minute special on the memory of Ronald Reagan.
Oh, God.
And a little red flag went up, and I said, gee, is that a quid pro quo?
Yeah.
Or not. But, yeah, I mean, they really did lay it on very thick. You know, the Republicans, are desperate for some sort of theme. Democrats, obviously, with a woman and an African-American, obviously have sort of change-cornered. It's funny. They have change-cornered, and Republicans are trying to rebrand the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those, you're right, they're both on display back-to-back nights. And I'm sure on Super Tuesday we're going to see, of those 22 states, I would predict at least 15 of them break record for Democratic turnout once again.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned that the Democrats closed ranks and refused to collaborate with Fox News Channel. I'm just wondering, what are the terms, if you know, Eric Bollert, between the Democratic National Committee and CNN for the rights to broadcast a debate like this? Because CNN profited by selling sponsorships to that great American car company, Hyundai, which, you know, sends that message about American jobs that Democratic viewers really want to see. And then the other big sponsor is called Americans for Balanced Energy Sources, the people who are promoting clean coal. And they even rented Kool and the Gang's Celebration to make burning coal and polluting the environment and the atmosphere really hip and groovy. You know,
I'm not sure the specifics. I know the parties do make some money, because I know I was reporting on the Fox boycott began with Nevada. The Nevada Democratic Party was willing to sponsor a Fox debate, and that's what started it. And I know I was told the Nevada Democratic Party was going to make some money, not a ton, you know, in the tens of thousands. So I think the parties earned something off it, but it's essentially, you know, I think CNN is free to sell their advertising however they want.
Yeah. It's a bit ironic, though, when you see what pops up in the breaks there. Anything else you want to comment on about the recent debates?
Not so much the debate, but again, going back to the Fox News, I mean, it's really been telling. Even if you looked at, if you looked at the returns for the Florida debate, if you remember, that was just a beauty contest on the Democratic side.
Right.
We're being told it was an absolutely crucial debate for the Republican side. Years past, Fox News absolutely would have dominated the ratings with all the conservative Republican news junkies going to Fox News. They barely beat CNN that night. It was basically a tie, and I would almost guarantee that on Super Tuesday, CNN beats Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
They beat them in New Hampshire, which was we're sort of seeing a changing of the guard, and Fox News Fox is really, CNN has really become the go-to place for cable campaign coverage, and again, it's because that Fox base is just listless, just like most Republicans are about their campaign.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also in your column mentioned that Major Garrett, quite a name, reported a scoop that so far has not proven to be true. It was before New Hampshire, when Hillary was expected to place badly, that they were speculating that they were going to call in the reinforcements, including James Carville and Paul Begala. And so far, the story is not true. It may become true. You just got to wait long enough, right?
Well, actually, no. He was very specific. He said it was all going to be announced the next day. So we know for a fact that it was a false story. And what was amazing was he went on Fox News and he reported it. He said he was told that there were conversations and Begala and Carville were going to join the Clinton campaign. Paul Begala almost immediately emailed Major Garrett and said, look, I'm not joining the Clinton campaign. I've had no conversations. Your source is wrong. and Major Garrett emailed back. He said he would take that under advisement. Which, I mean, I've always known that people at Fox practice their own brand of journalism, but I guess that just reinforces it.
Well, you
then,
know, on a,
so
a,
it gets
go
better
ahead.
Because then a couple hours later, Garrett goes back on the news on Fox and he repeats the story. And this time he claims he was told that Begala was on a conference call the night before and you know, they're going to hash it out, and it's all going to be announced the next day. And then Begala emails him again. He says, are you crazy? Would you stop this? I'm not joining the campaign. I don't know who's telling you this. It's totally false. And Major Garrett emailed back. He says, you know me. I'm a stand-up guy. I don't make stuff up. And on his blog, he said, more to come. I'll be updating the story soon. And, of course, as he reported, it was all supposed to happen the day after the New Hampshire primary. Obviously, neither one of them joined the campaign. And that was it. It just sort of poof, went into thin air. And as Begala wrote, he wrote about this in the Huffington Post, you know, Garrett is supposed to be one of their sort of straight-up, you know, nonpartisan reporters, and he was wondering, if this is what Garrett's doing, what are their hacks up to?
Well, but maybe this was fed to Major by that Cub reporter named Rupert Murdoch. Because
who predicted right that Dick Gephardt was going to be the VP.
Hey, I got the New York Post front page from August of 2004 up on my cork board here. That's a great moment in yellow journalism. And,
right, and they had to print it because Rupert had great information. So
right. Eric Bollard is with us from Media Matters, their website, mediamatters.org. And I see that you now have a special shrine for Chris Matthews. It's called the Matthews Monitor.
That's right. That came up after, again, going back to the night of New Hampshire primary, where Chris Matthews, who has been absolutely merciless on Hillary Clinton, not just attacking her, you know, as immoral and a crummy politician and a dishonest person, but it was just laying the sexist stuff on incredibly thick, you know, calling her a she-devil and talking about her, how her voice is so grating and her male supporters are eunuchs. I mean, just unbelievable stuff. So after the
sorry, I just had to do that.
After the New Hampshire win, he says, well, I'm never going to underestimate Hillary Clinton again. And 8 hours later, he comes back on MSNBC and says the only reason she's a contender is Bill messed around.
Right.
And the New York voters felt sorry for her.
Now, he issued a mea culpa, but he couldn't manage to mention David Brock or Media Matters.
No, none of them can. But he had sort of a semi-apology. He couldn't understand why people couldn't see he has a good heart, and et cetera, et cetera. The good news is the sexist stuff has pretty much been stopped cold, not just for Matthews, but all the other pundits who felt like she was going to be out of the race. They could pile on and they could make these wildly, you know, misogynistic comments and write stuff about her. That stuff is sort of dead in its tracks.
Mm-hmm.
He's still quite critical of Hillary, but that wasn't our point. Our point was it's just not acceptable, you know, for MSNBC to have their star political analyst making these kind of comments. I mean, they would never be allowed or acceptable against, you know, if he was making, you know, comments like that about Hispanics or Jews or gays or blacks or anyone.
Yeah.
Catholics, you name it. I mean, nobody should be subjected to that kind of slime. So we have set up sort of a full-time monitor, and we're going to keep an eye on him. And so far, he's definitely been behaving, but we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, one more item here. The Glenn Beck TV show, which really doesn't belong on headline news if it belongs anywhere. You report here on Thursday the 31st, they had a guest who compared La Raza to the KKK, and the Council of La Raza, the National Council, is fighting back, and they have contacted the major cable news networks to complain about the hateful coverage, hate speech, and the demonizing of the Hispanic community, particularly in the cable news coverage of immigration issues.
Yeah.
And they cite the Glenn Beck item on headline news that was supposed to be a joke about a factory that takes Mexican bodies, the illegals, and turns them into a fuel called Mexinol. I mean, that's beyond tasteless. It's just subhuman.
I think it's just a glimpse of what we're going to see for the general election, no matter who.
Yeah.
The Republican candidate, even if the Republican candidate does not, you know, subscribe subscribe to any of this kind of stuff.
Well, I'm glad they're fighting back. Now, did you have a chance to see the Colbert Report when he had Lou Dobbs on recently?
I did not.
Oh, you got to find that, you know, on the website somewhere.
Yeah.
It was so funny. Colbert conducted his part of the interview in Spanish.
Oh, I read about that.
Wearing a pink jacket like the host of Sabado Gigante.
Right.
And it was classic. And Dobbs played along with it. He spoke English the whole way.
Yeah.
But it really is one of the best satires I've seen of cable news coverage of immigration. And Lou Dobbs, to his credit, or maybe it was an Ali G moment.
But, right.
But he was there, and he was the focus of the joke. Eric, I know you got to run, so thank you very much for your comments today. And I'll direct people to MediaMatters.org.
Talk to you soon.
All right, that's fine. Eric Bollard. We got room for a couple of phone calls. If you'd like to react to Thursday night's Democratic debate, get on the line right now, 888-5-PETER-B. Tell me what you thought, how CNN did, how the candidates did, and if it changed your opinion. 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. It is brought your way by Macy's. Check out Macy's this weekend where the clearance savings just keep getting better. Save on fashions and accessories for him, for her, and for the home. Taking a look at traffic, you're going to find it slow and go, as you oftentimes find it in Carmel. Northbound Highway 1 at Carmel Valley Road, it's an accident. A big rig with an overturned trailer is partially blocking the right lane. The left lane of eastbound Carmel Valley Road itself is actually blocked. The CHP is on the scene, but that is a major problem. The Fishhook also continues to be slow as you make that transition from southbound 17 over to southbound Highway 1. And in Santa Cruz, northbound Highway 1 at the Emmeline Avenue off-ramp, you're going to find that closed through the summer. That is for road work, and that's starting to stack up traffic. That's traffic on KRXA.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
You're listening to the greatest talk radio station on the planet, west of the Mississippi, along the Pacific coast, in California, below Davenport, above Lucia, and west of the Gavilan Mountains. KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
It's time for Mo on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I would walk 10 miles on my hands and knees. Ain't no doubt about it, baby, it's you I am the beast. I'm wrestle with a lion and the grizzly bear. It's my life, baby, but I don't care. Ain't that tough enough? Ain't that tough enough?
lines open if you'd like to comment on the debates. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. As I mentioned to Eric Bollert, I was really impressed with both candidates, Obama and Clinton, in Thursday night's debate. And the song I played kind of set the subtext theme. It was unspoken. But I think each candidate was trying to prove that they are tough enough to take on the pharma and insurance companies and health care reform, tough enough to take on the Republicans and the slime machinery that will inevitably be arrayed against them in the fall, and tough enough to deal with the situation in Iraq. And while I've been critical of Hillary Clinton, and I'm still not prepared to support her in the primary, I have to say that the answers that she gave on Iraq last night, with the exception of her vote in 2002, were pretty persuasive and sounded sensible. She talked about starting to pull two brigades out a month after she takes office, and that it would take about a year. Obama talks about pulling them out immediately, but hey, you know that it's not going to happen overnight. They're not just going to, you know, bring out 160,000 uniformed people and 100,000 American contractors in, you know, in a 30-day period. And so, again, I felt that she sounds sensible. What doesn't work for me is that her history and the various positions she's taken on Iraq over the last 5 years, five and a half, will be played against her by the Republicans. And I consider that to be a major vulnerability. On the issue of her vote to authorize force in the fall of 2002, I think Hillary's answer was very weak. She basically said, well, everybody else thought so. The intelligence said this and that. And at minimum, she is copying to groupthink, that because everybody else thought there were WMD or everybody else that she talked to thought that, that was the appropriate way to go. And gosh, if I knew now what we knew, or if I knew then what we know now, she suggests it would be very different. But she cannot come to the point that John Edwards did 2 years ago to say, you know what? I effed up. I was wrong. I never should have trusted President Bush. I never should have extended him that authority. And she cannot say that. And I find that seriously troubling, because she is saying that her experience is what better qualifies her to be president over Barack Obama. And he countered forcefully, but not in a personal or mean way, that judgment counts. And I agree with that. At a certain point, when Obama was making his points, Wolf Blitzer said, that's a swipe at you, Senator Clinton. And she laughed and said it was. And I don't really think it was. It wasn't a personal statement. It was a clear statement from Obama that he is separating himself from her poor judgment on Iraq. And he also ties it to the more recent vote on the Kyle Lieberman resolution, which I consider equally troubling. And so on that, I give advantage Barack. But overall, I think that it was toe-to-toe. I think both candidates did extremely well. And again, I commend CNN for not dumbing it down, not insulting us with a lot of trivial questions or gotcha questions or attempts to embarrass the candidates. So I was pleased by that, and I hope that we see that going forward with, you know, better kinds of debates, more substantive material. And the nice part, while I miss Edwards, and I'm sorry he withdrew or suspended his campaign as early as he did, I do think that it was very nice to have the two candidates there, able to talk back and forth with limited time constraints and that sort of thing. Larry, I'm sorry, I don't really have time to take your call. You called in just a little bit too late, but thank you for dialing in. It's time for us to go to a break, and coming up after the top of the hour, Brad Friedman will be with us. We're going to talk about Tuesday's California primary and whether it's going to be an electoral meltdown. We'll also get his comments on what happened in Florida, where one precinct reported 110% voter participation. And we'll also find out the latest from the recount in New Hampshire. Brad Friedman from Bradblog joining us next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill, Brian Urban is on duty today taking your calls.
For We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. January unemployment figures out today, says CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason, show American businesses have stopped hiring. And even worse,
the economy lost jobs, which is something it usually only does during a recession. So what this is an indicator, a signal, the clearest one we may have had yet, that if we're not in a recession, we're about to be in one.
There was quick reaction from President Bush visiting Kansas City today. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has that.
Much to the president's dismay, the economy's loss of 17,000 jobs last month brought to an end a 52-month streak of job growth on his watch.
But there are certainly some troubling signs. There's serious signs that that the economy is weakening, and we got to do something about it.
So he again called on the Senate to follow the lead of the House and quickly pass the economic stimulus package. But at the same time, he says the economy's fundamentals are strong. We're just in a rough patch. Mark Noller, CBS News, with the president in Kansas City.
Yahoo stockholders are saying Yahoo. The company shares rose more than $9 today on word of Microsoft's $44.6 billion takeover bid.
It's basically an admission by Microsoft that it could not go up against Google and online advertising on its own, and it needs to come together with someone else in that space, and they're choosing Yahoo.
CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus. Actor Wesley Snipes, accused of avoiding taxes on some $32 million of income, has been convicted on three counts of failing to file returns, but a federal court jury in Ocala, Florida, acquitted him on the most serious charges of tax fraud and conspiracy. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen thinks the matter will be resolved quickly.
It's obviously not a perfect verdict for Snipes, but it's a lot better than it could have been. He's not technically even a convicted felon now because his convictions were for misdemeanors. So I look for a swift end to this. Maybe Snipes pays the money that he owes with some penalties and then does a brief sentence. Certainly nothing near the three-year maximum.
If convicted on all counts, he could have faced 16 years. Yet again, prosecutors in Aruba have reopened their investigation into the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. Joran Vandersloot, the Dutch student who's one of three young men under scrutiny, reportedly confessed his involvement on tape in a phone conversation with a reporter. But now, Vandersloot says he was lying, just telling the man what he wanted to hear. Nasty weather across the Midwest. At a rest stop in Michigan, motorists shared their stories of driving on snowy roads.
They're all going really slow. The highway's bad.
It's slippery. I tried stopping to pull in here, and I slid quite a ways.
A lot of people are driving way too fast.
In Illinois, six highway deaths are blamed on the storm. Snoqualmie Pass in Washington State remains closed by heavy snow. The Cascades have gotten 4 to 6 feet this week, and another foot or more is expected tonight. The Dow up 92 points today. This is CBS News.
So you're in the market for a good used car but have no idea where to look. Well, I can take the angst out of your auto search. Honda Certified Used Cars. First, it's a Honda. They kind of corner the market on reliability. Second, they're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed by one of the best warranties in the business. And don't forget, it may be used, but it's still a Honda. Honda Certified Used Cars. The next best thing to new. And then some.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
So, hi,
Jen, how do you want your hair done?
Oh, I just want to try something really different.
Okay, well, if we trim your disorganized finances, layer your expenses, and give your late invoicing some body, you'll look just like a movie star.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily handle routine chores, like organizing finances and tracking expenses, so you can get back to what you do best.
You are a stylist, aren't you?
Award-winning.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
Are you a Beatles fan? Do you like theme hotels? Well, CBS's Sam Litzinger has found just the thing.
It's been a hard day.
Need to rest up after working like a dog? Well, perhaps you Beatles fans would like to take a nap at the new Hard Day's Night Hotel in Liverpool, England, home of the Fab Four. The aim is to provide everything Fab's fans could want, a yellow submarine jukebox in the lobby, Beatles photos on the walls. The hotel sound system plays Beatles tunes, but not all the time. The manager says that would drive him mad. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
So-called soft drugs like marijuana are tolerated in the Netherlands. Pot is sold and smoked in government-regulated coffee shops. But the Dutch Interior Minister says police officers who light up when they're off duty set a bad example. He says pot smoking doesn't fit the public image of police and it has to stop. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes. What do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures. But I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents A Word from Your Tires.
Sir, I think I speak for the four of us when I say that we do not support your current errand.
Well, we're going to the tire store. You guys are tires.
Head to the dealership.
Well, at the tire store, you can see your buddies.
We don't associate with off-brands. Your dealer has name brands. Michelin, Continental, Goodyear.
Enough.
I don't think they carry that one.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Every week at this time, we talk election protection with America's election sheriff. He is citizen journalist, editor, and publisher of bradblog.com. Frankie goes to Hollywood. Thursday night, Hillary went to Hollywood. Barack went to Hollywood. Just blocks away from the Bradblog World Headquarters Nerve Center and solar-powered server farm. Right, Brad?
And can you believe neither of them came by to say hello?
I cannot believe that.
I don't know what must have happened.
Schedules were tight. Secret Service said, Bradblog? Oh, we've been surveilling him for years.
We'll tell you everything you need to know. You no need to stop over there.
Yeah. Well, right up here at Bradblog, you have exclusive footage, and I'm really pleased you put this up because I watched the debate very closely, had it on my TiVo, and after one of the commercial breaks where they brought us messages from Hyundai, the great American car manufacturer that's building jobs for Americans here, and also the clean coal industry, they came back to a cover shot of the street there on Hollywood Boulevard, near Vine. That's, of course, where the Kodak Theater is, right next to Grauman's Theater. And they showed just a very quick cover shot, and I could see there were a lot of people there. Some of them had campaign signs for candidates, but one or two protest signs got on screen for about 14 nanoseconds. But at BradBlog, we've got the footage that you didn't see on CNN. Can I play it here?
Please do.
I have the rights. You've signed them up?
Indeed, you have.
Okay. U.S. out of Iraq, stop the war. These are banners I'm reading to you. Jesus loves all babies, a Huckabee sign, a Ron Paul poster. We've got some, this Jew supports opposes U.S. support for Israel, a Hillary poster, Randy Newman music, Real Change, impeach Bush Cheney, Obama, Hillary, Obama, Obama, a picture of Obama, some fans waving, don't attack Iran, let's see, California Pizza Kitchen, there's a man dressed in gold, some of those other characters from the Hollywood Walk. Los Angeles Heart Obama.
I am voting for Obama because I am sick of the business as usual politics. And I'm sick of not being cared about.
That's a mom with a youngster on her shoulder.
$1 billion, and I want a better future for him. That's basically it.
So a very interesting scene. Brad, did you wade out into it?
No, I had to watch it on CNN like everyone else. I couldn't stand the notion of even going down there, to be frank. But I'll tell you, that footage, I want to give credit to Alan Breslauer, who does a video for us at BradBlog. He of the one who caught the now former head of the DOJ voting section, John Tanner, claiming that, minorities don't grow elderly the way white people do. They die first.
Yeah.
So he was down there, crack BradBlog video crew, getting that footage for you. And once again, showing you, it looks like the real debate was outside the theater. And once again, showing you what is actually going on in America just outside of CNN's camera frames, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brad, I listened to the whole debate, and while I think the candidates did a good job, and I think that CNN did a much better job than they have on many of the other debates,
mm-hmm.
Nobody talked about elections. Nobody talked about voting machines. Nobody talked about whether the integrity of our election process is something that is up to American standards.
Elections and voting machines are apparently not important to elections. If we are to believe what we see in the media, it's incredible how, you know, they don't discuss it, despite, you know, the ongoing problems that we've seen in the primaries and caucuses so far, and all of the concerns and some of the media. I should point out, Los Angeles Times last week, I believe it is the first time ever, at least that I ever recall seeing, Los Angeles Times ran a story about voting machines.
No.
And not only a story, they ran two stories. It was a two-part series, 2,800 words. Now, mind you, Peter B. Collins listeners and BradBlog readers would have learned absolutely nothing new from that report, but simply the fact that the LA Times decided to report on it is certainly notable. So, you know, with all of those concerns and the reports we've seen, even amongst the print media who's ignored this issue, the fact that it does not come up is simply extraordinary, you know, in these debates. You know, what are your plans? Just to simply ask the question, what are your plans? What do you intend to do about election reform issues, given the, you know, whenever you see a poll on, you know, what are the issues that matter to progressives, election reform always comes up. But apparently it's not on Wolf Blitzer's question list there.
Well, I think in some ways the issue is going to be forced on Super Tuesday, because the networks are going to be there with their big boards and, you know, those sets where the anchor can walk right across from Indiana to Illinois without paying a toll. And I think that they're going to have to come to grips with the fact that California will not be reporting instant results in many jurisdictions where they have either reduced, well, they can't eliminate, they have to have one touchscreen voting machine in each precinct. But we know that there's going to be some hand counting of paper ballots in some areas, and there's a high probability, at least I think, you tell me what you think, you know more than I do, that by the close of election night coverage East Coast time, they're going to be disappointed because they won't be able to really call California.
Well, you will remember that the mainstream corporate media there, the network broadcasts, they have access to exit polls and exit poll data that the rest of America is not allowed to see. We are no longer entrusted with that information. The exit poll data that they release after the close of polls has been adjusted to sync up with the announced results. So, in truth, the media may be able to call the race just fine, as usual, based on their super-secret data that you, Peter, and I are not entrusted to look at. So they may well do that and then go about ignoring the concerns, you know, about the way the votes are counted, if they're counted at all. I mean, you'll remember back in 2006, Peter, you and I did, what did we do, an eight-hour broadcast on election night in 2006, covering these issues from all over the country and the concerns, the problems that were occurring around the country with the voting systems. And one would have thought that they would have been forced upon the media at that point, too. But no, they simply ignored it. They went ahead and played their horse race game and, you know, went about their business as if none of this stuff mattered. Much as, you know, good luck finding information about what happened, what was it, 2 weeks ago in the Republican primary out in South Carolina when an entire county, 100% of the precincts experienced voting machine failures. The machines wouldn't start up. People were forced to, you know, find any scrap of paper they could, literally vote on notebook, on paper towels just to cast a vote. Hardly registered a blip either in the mainstream corporate media or on the you know, on the agenda of any of the candidates, Republican or Democrat. I would think they would be concerned going into you know, the next week. You had the Democrats who had their Republican primary, and things went much better, I believe, that week. But you know, did anybody make any noise about this amongst the candidates? None. It's as if it doesn't exist. It's an incredible story.
Yeah. Well, as the hour progresses, I want to get an update on New Hampshire, where Dennis Kucinich called for a recount. He's no longer in the presidential race, but he is continuing to press, I believe, for a better recount, an honest recount in New Hampshire. And I also want to talk about that precinct in Florida that produced 110% turnout of registered voters.
And we'll have also some late breaking news for you tonight, Peter. You may not have even seen it yet, but just breaking on your old friend J. Kenneth Blackwell out of Ohio.
Well, in fact, I did see that, and you'll be happy to know that when I was in Washington last week, one of my guests was Ohio Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones. And one of the questions I asked her is, where is Ken Blackwell? I said, is he with Baby Doc in the south of France? and she said that he has dropped out of sight. And so we'll touch on that story as we continue. I want to open up the phone lines. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com here this whole hour. And as California and 21 other states prepare to vote on Tuesday, I know many of you have already voted absentee or by mail, but I'm one of those persons who goes right there first thing in the morning on Election Day. And so if you have any questions about how this vote is going to proceed, what cautions Brad might have for you on the best way to make sure that your vote is properly counted, this is the time to bring it on. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. And I've got a couple more of the uncounted DVDs that I haven't given away yet. So I'll just mention that two callers between now and the end of the hour, I'm going to just pick you willy-nilly at random, and we'll give you a copy of the uncounted DVD. No begging, please. Just let it be a pleasant surprise, okay? 888-573-8372. You can grab the podcast of this or any other hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Just go to my website and follow the links at peterbcollins.com.
You're listening to KRXA 540. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
This Sunday, Rockwell and Real Estate will have one of the hottest green companies, Green Envirotech. Meet Daryl Smith, owner of Green Envirotech. They have a light-activated product that eliminates indoor air pollution, plus a special product that can remove stains from glass, brick, and other hard surfaces. That's this Sunday at 10 a.m. Rockwell and Real Estate, where real estate investors meet green companies. For more information on Envirotech, call 1-800-968-9007. That's 1-800-968-9007.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras. Whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Slow down, you move too fast.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast, and I'm inviting you to join me Sundays starting February 10th to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last right here on KRXA 540. What you know when?
Checking traffic on KRXA, brought to you by H&R Block. H&R Block has more than 110,000 tax professionals and over 12,000 offices. Put any one of them to work for you. Call 1-800-HR-BLOCK or visit yougotpeople.com today. We continue to have problems in the form of some slow traffic where you would expect to find it, that on the Fishhook transition from southbound 17 over to southbound Highway 1. We still have stop-and-go traffic as you get on to that transition, and that's going to continue on to Highway 1. We have some slowing to report in Santa Cruz, northbound Highway 1 at Emmeline Avenue. That off-ramp, of course, closed for road work, but no other delays through Monterey, Carmel, or Pacific Grove at this hour. No stalls or accidents. I'm Frank Sullivan. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman from Brad Blog with us this hour. Lines available if you want to join in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Election Day, Tuesday here in California. I won't be watching the detectives. I'll be watching the defectives, the touchscreen voting machine in my precinct. In fact, I think I'm going to go in and just ask to see it. I don't think I'll use it, Brad, but just, you know, like inspecting a bathroom someplace.
Well, let's see. What do they do up there? Which machines do they use up in your room?
We got op scanners with fill-in-the-blank ballots, and I believe there will be one touchscreen, the voting machine, as required by the Secretary of State.
Well, you can, by the way, do what my father did back in 2004 or 2006. He had a choice between the touchscreen and the optical scan. He said, okay, I'll take the touchscreen. He went up and he went through the process to see how it would go, got to the confirm screen, and said, you know what? I changed my mind. I'm going to vote on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And he went back and said, give me a paper ballot instead. So if you'd like the touchscreen experience without having the loss of vote, you could try that method if you want. And you can see how folks, if they even know how to operate those darn machines.
And Bradblog reports that Rush Limbaugh went in and voted, and it didn't appear to accept his vote. So he flipped it back to the screen and entered it again. And he's not really sure if he voted once or twice.
That's right. He either voted once, twice, or not at all. Of course, there's no way to know on those machines that they use down there in Palm Beach County.
Mm-hmm.
For the last time, by the way, in Florida, they were using those touchscreen machines. So they'll be returning back to paper in November, and Ann Coulter will continue to be a voter fraud felon no matter what they vote on down there.
Did you have to mention Ann Coulter?
It's the least I could do, Peter.
All right. Now, I've got to pause here because Brian, during the break, alerted me that Raw Story is reporting that Ann Coulter has said that Hillary Clinton would be tougher on terrorists than John McCain, and if they are the nominees, she is threatening to campaign for Hillary.
Yeah. Well, I saw that report as well. And not only to campaign for Hillary, but she says she's going to vote for her. So I look forward to that, because I suspect Brad Blog will have another report on the fact that she is still, as far as I know, illegally registered to vote in Palm Beach County.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, where, oh, where is J. Kenneth Blackwell?
Well, you know, he has been, since leaving the Secretary of State's office in Ohio, where he ran one of the worst-run elections in American history, he's actually been a columnist over at townhall.com, the right wingnut fake news outlet on the Internet. So we know he's alive. However, he was recently invited, just last week, he was invited to testify before a subcommittee on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee under John Conyers and Gerald Nadler. They sent him an invitation to come testify next Friday. And as of late this afternoon, the Brad Blog can confirm a report that was also filed by John Craig at the Cincinnati Inquirer that Blackwell is, he says, quote, my schedule will not permit me to attend the hearings.
Well, that's a really powerful schedule. That's probably you know, one of those nuclear Blackberries.
That's right. He's busy sitting around doing nothing other than weeping. So he won't be able to make it to absolutely nobody's surprise. As a matter of fact, I contacted the judiciary folks when I saw they had sent him that invitation and made a friendly wager on the fact that he weren't going to be coming no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But the result now is that the House Judiciary Committee may well vote to issue a subpoena to J. Kenneth Blackwell to compel him to come in and testify, which could be certainly an interesting showdown if they're able to get a majority of the House Judiciary Committee to go along with it. It'd be an interesting showdown. As you know, John Conyers has been for many years now trying to compel J. Kenneth Blackwell to testify. The hearing was said to be on voter suppression issues, and, well, who knows more about voter suppression issues than J. Kenneth Blackwell?
That's your basic expert witness.
Indeed.
Let's go to Natalie in Sacramento. Hi, Natalie.
Hi there. Peter B., Brad, it's, I'm just so happy that you do this segment regularly. I really think it's important to really express how important the integrity of our elections should be. I went to go see Uncounted. I thought it was a phenomenal movie. I bought it. I passed it around, and I've lost it.
You've lost control of your copy, huh?
Yes.
Well, you could get a replacement at uncountedthemovie.com.
Oh, excellent. I will do that.
And I've got some other callers on the line. I'm going to, since you've already seen it, I'm going to give away a copy a little bit later.
That is fine. But I just wanted to say, in my county, we do the optical scan. Is that much more trustworthy than the touchscreen voting?
Well, it is not in and of itself more trustworthy, but it does mean that you'll have a voter hand-marked paper ballot that actually reflects the voter intent. That's the good news.
Now, we'll save the bad news for after the break.
Okay.
Thank you, Natalie. Brad Friedman will continue. Lines open at 888-5-PETER-B. I am your humble host.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Jim Moore Income Tax in Watsonville has been helping Monterey Bay Area residents with personal income tax preparation for more than 20 years. And this year, Manager Juan Gonzalez is prepared to assist all taxpayers take advantage of tax credits and rebates especially targeted for the eco-minded. The staff of Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in fast, professional income tax preparation at a very reasonable price. Do you have a naughty tax problem? Let Juan Gonzalez and his staff provide the expert assistance you need. Jim Moore Income Tax is located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. This year, let Juan Gonzalez show you where the green is for green living taxpayers. Visit Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville. Be sure to take copies of your 2006 tax return and all of your 2007 W-2s and 1099s. Remember Jim Moore Income Tax for all of your tax preparation needs.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Hi there, KRXA listeners. This is Hal on behalf of the Central Avenue Bakery. Tina and her staff want to thank all of you for becoming regulars at the Central Avenue Bakery at 173 Central Avenue in beautiful Pacific Grove. February is a special month at the Central Avenue Bakery as they celebrate Valentine's Day with an Italian buffet and a free glass of wine with every dinner. Space is limited, so make your reservations for Valentine's Day now. Then, at the end of February, Central Avenue Bakery celebrates its third anniversary with live music, free food, and prizes. Enjoy organic foods, pastries, and coffee. They also have a gluten-free menu and many organic gluten-free pastries. Stop by one of my favorite restaurants, the Central Avenue Bakery in Pacific Grove, today.
Sun Street Center knows many people have had a DUI. It doesn't mean you're an alcoholic, but it does mean you have to complete the state requirements and clear up your driving record. The DUI classes at Sun Street Centers is part of that process. Sun Street will work with you and set up a payment plan. Stop looking over your shoulder when you drive. Just get it done. Call Sun Street Centers today, 753-5135. They're state licensed in Salinas, Seaside, and King City. Call 753-5135 for DUI classes at Sun Street.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Truth is, I thought it mattered. I thought that music mattered. But does it bollocks? Not compared to how people matter.
Let's get inspired. You can sing along with this one, all right?
I get knocked down.
Chumbawamba, it's actually a drinking song about pissing the night away. 34 minutes after the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show continues with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And Brad, we had to interrupt as you were about to deliver the bad news to, I think, Natalie from Sacramento about voting on a ballot where you, fill in the blank and then it gets inserted into an optical scanner.
Right. That good news was that she gets to actually vote with a voter-marked, hand-marked paper ballot. That's good news. Bad news is whether it counted or not or counted accurately is a whole other matter. So you got the ballot. That's the first part. We got a paper ballot. Now we got to make sure it's counted. And, of course, the best way to do that is to, be a poll worker, an observer, to show up to your county registrar's office for the tabulation on election night. Bring a video camera. You're allowed to, the entire process should be 100% transparent. You should be able to watch everything. And wherever that counting room is, you should be able to the Secretary of State has determined that you, the public, may have a full view of any monitors or any computers that they're counting. You may videotape the proceedings and see everything that's going on inside that room. So, you can do it. She's allowed it. Make sure you go out there and get her done, as they say.
All right. Any other cautions you would offer to voters in California?
Well, I know that a lot of folks, you had mentioned people have absentee ballots sitting around. Perhaps if they do, I might recommend rather than mail them in, of course, at this late date, it'd be hard to get them back. But if you still have one, you can fill it out and bring it in to your precinct or to the county registrar's office on election day. And drop it off there. And as a matter of fact, if you're going to vote by absentee, which I do not recommend, I recommend you vote at the polls on election day. But if you're going to, it's always best to bring the ballot by, hopefully to your precinct on election day. Otherwise, bring it to the county to have a better chance of it actually being counted.
All right. We've got fans in Costa Rica. Larry and Janet are Americans who are sitting out the bush years in Central America. And I've been to Costa Rica. It's a beautiful place. I'm just a little jealous, particularly with all the rain and cold this time of year. Anyway, Larry writes, I do not seem to escape the conclusion that the elimination of the vote and the significance of the vote is proceeding as planned in a soon-to-be dictatorship. Does Brad have another conclusion? He says, I remain your broken record.
Well, you know what? I'm glad the word is getting out as far as Costa Rica. And I hope that Larry and Janet, was it?
Right, Janet.
Larry and Janet have a room for me. Because depending on how things go next November, I may need to come down and join them. They may not be wrong in their suggestion in that email.
Billy in Capitola joins us, and if I'm not mistaken, he's got a Costa Rica stamp on his passport.
I have listened to the Peter B. Collins Show in Costa Rica.
Wow.
True.
Wow.
And Peter, you do a great job, but I want to talk to Brad.
Go ahead.
I'll
turn my microphone off.
It was great to meet you last week, Brad.
Is that Billy Sunshine?
Yes.
Oh, good to talk to you, Billy. Great to meet you up there in Santa Cruz as well, where I was doing a conference and unable to speak to Peter while he was out in D.C., but it was great to meet you.
Yeah, we miss Peter. What you do is very important. I see this as sort of a part one of a three-leg attempt to try to win back our democracy, the other two legs being, redistricting and term limits. On Tuesday, we get a chance to vote on term limits, And, for example, here we have a pretty good guy, John Laird, who's about to be termed out. But the fact that he didn't get redistricting for me, I'm willing to let him go. What's your take on this?
Mm. Well, you know, it's funny because redistricting is such a partisan issue, but it depends on which state you're in. Of course, out here, the Democrats don't want to open up redistricting to anybody but the Democrats because they run the state house, and it was on the ballot back in Ohio where the Republicans run the joint. And in that case, it was the Republicans who didn't want to have redistricting. So, yeah, you need to have it. That said, I really don't know how you do it and how you do it fairly. I haven't studied the issue a lot, but I'm not sure how you go about doing it. You know, they talk about having a nonpartisan commission take a look at these things. I got news for you. In America, at this point, nobody is nonpartisan. So I don't know how you come up with an answer to that problem.
I don't think giving them another 14 years in the legislature is going to actually get me a better solution. They had a shot at it. They didn't deliver it, even though they promised it. I think they all need to go.
Mr. Sunshine, would you be interested in my comment?
Yes, I will. Yes, yes, Peter, come on, jump in.
And your name is what?
I think it is possible to build a process that is neutral. And by setting criteria for what each specific district should include in terms of the population, the distribution of Democrats and Republicans, and that I think we also have to come up with some sort of a rule that says it cannot look like a kindergarten sketch. That you know, it has to be reasonable in terms of what I would call contiguousness. That you know, there are communities that are obviously observable, and that those communities should not be arbitrarily divided into different districts for political reasons.
Well, good luck finding someone who can be the arbiter of what is reasonable and what isn't, and you know, in such a way that they won't draw fire from whoever hates the idea. But I might add, toss in something above redistricting and above term limiting, which would be campaign, a clean money campaign.
Mm, yeah, there's the fourth leg.
Well,
you need another leg.
If you get those special interests, those corporate interests out of the election process, and if you make sure your election is clean and 100% transparent, I think you got a far better chance of getting to what you're talking about, and it might even become unnecessary.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks,
right,
Peter.
You bet, Billy. Good to talk to you now. To Roxanne, and I won't try to imitate Sting in saying your name. Hello, Roxanne from 1240 Talk City in Sacramento. Welcome.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, I hate it when you say that. I'm grateful that you called. How long were you suffering on hold, Roxanne?
14 minutes.
Okay, I apologize.
Not so bad.
I apologize.
So bad.
You know,
held longer for other
shows. Wasn't suffering as long as folks apparently in the Bay Area are going to be suffering, according to NBC 11 up there, who said that, who put out a notice saying that voters would be suffering from huge delays on Tuesday, because election results might not be available until 6 a.m. Wednesday morning.
Oh, that's suffering.
So, you know, if we need to send water, blankets, food to anybody up there to make it through this enormous disaster and mayhem that's predicted by NBC 11 in the Bay Area, please let me know.
Gotcha. Roxanne, go ahead.
Oh, I don't know how they'll make it.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I moved to California 3 years ago, and I had never encountered these scan machines. And the first time I went to vote, they just told me, well, you just slide it into the machine. And I said, well, do I slide it with the lettering up or do I slide it with the lettering down? And of all the folks that were working there, no one seemed to be able to tell me decisively, is it up or is it down?
Oy.
So I asked them if there was some sort of a comment form, you know, that I could fill out. And then I also...
what do you think it is, Denny's?
Well, clearly there was an issue if they didn't know how to operate the machine. And I'm like, well, how do I know my vote's even getting counted if I just arbitrarily? It's like, you know, the lottery. Is it going to work or not, you know?
Yeah, it would be better run if it was run by Denny's and fewer African-Americans would be turned away.
Yeah. Well, the next time I went back to vote, they did actually have a person standing there that was trained to feed it through the machine. So, again, I said, well, how do you know for sure this is the right way? Because it was an older gal there, And she seemed, well, this is just the way that they told me. And I said, so you're for sure that it's going to be scanned and my vote's getting counted if we put it in like this? Yes. But I don't really know. Is there any way I can find out if it's supposed to be up or it's supposed to be down?
Well, you can find out if it's supposed to be up or down. Call the call your registrar's office and ask them that very specific detail.
Okay.
Unfortunately, though, you hit upon a point that you said there is no way of knowing whether it's counted correctly. That's true. There is no way of knowing whether it's counted correctly.
Even if it goes in heads up. And Roxanne, in my precinct, the way it works is they give me a ballot and they wrap it in a paper sleeve.
Yeah.
And I carry it to the booth and I fill it out. I put it back in the sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
And the sleeve has arrows on it that indicate which way I'm supposed to insert the top of my mm-hmm. ballot into the feeder of the machine. So check at your precinct and see if that's the method they use, because for me, there isn't any question about it. The instructions are pretty clear. The same doubts remain, though, at the end of the process.
So then my other question is, at some point, do they audit some of the boxes with these machines to see if the results of the scan actually are consistent with the ballots that have dropped down in there?
Maybe.
Great question. Maybe is just about right. California has a law that is touted by Common Cause as one of the best in the country. And just to give you an idea both of how out to lunch Common Cause is and how bad the rest of the country is, the law in California is that 1% of the ballots are to be audited at some point after the election. Now, these audits can be done in such a way that they find that the vote was 90% miscounted, and there is nothing in California law that says what you're supposed to do at that point. So you can audit these things. It's really a spot check, not an audit. You can do these spot checks, find that the count was 90% off, and the registrars can say, okay, well, end of election, everything is certified and everything is fine. So that's what we're dealing with. Now, Secretary of State Bowen did implement a new requirement for a 10% spot check, random spot check, in elections that are closer than 0.5%. San Diego and Riverside and some other counties went to court recently against her because they said that was just too onerous to have to count 10% of the ballots by hand in races that were under 0.5%. Thankfully, the courts got it right. They backed Bowen on that one, and when those same counties went back and appealed last Friday, it was tossed out. So that's the good news, such that we have any this Friday.
All right, Roxanne, you've been a great sport. Would you like a DVD of Uncounted?
I would love it.
All right, hold on. Brian will get your mailing address, and sooner or later, a postal worker will bring it to you, okay?
Thanks, guys. Brad, you're doing a great job. I really enjoy your blog and reading your website, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks,
Roxanne.
Thank
you, Roxanne.
Hey, Brian, that's a DVD online for her, and ask her if she wants fries with that, all right? Let's go to Los Angeles, and I believe Henry is on the line. Welcome, Henry.
Hi. Thank you, Peter. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Henry.
Hi, yes. I have to echo Roxanne's sentiments. You are doing a great job.
Okay, don't echo too much. We got to run to a break in a second.
Okay, I have a question. There was talk about the initiative to divide up the electoral votes in California. Does anybody have any update on that?
Well, we could probably give you the latest, although it may be up to Peter. Should we wait until we come back for the break for that?
No. Let's dispense. Go ahead.
Okay, real quickly. It is on target to be on the ballot this November, and the Republicans are preparing a fight. Peter had an interview, actually, with one of the fellows who began this initiative. The Republicans are preparing to fight come November after the election if it looks like if A, the initiative passes, and if B, it looks like the fight to make it go into effect before the Electoral College meets in January of 2009 comes about. So it's sitting there, it's waiting, and it should be something that folks should be keeping their eye on.
And it appeared to be a project, an offshoot of the Giuliani campaign. Can't prove that, but that's my speculation. Now that he's out of the race, perhaps he's handed that to John McCain with the 9/11 franchise. That'll remain to be seen. Henry, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Peter.
We'll take a break and return. More of your calls next with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Checking traffic on KRXA, brought to you by H&R Block. H&R Block has more than 110,000 tax professionals and over 12,000 offices. Put any one of them to work for you. Call 1-800-HR-BLOCK or visit yougotpeople.com today. We continue to have problems in the form of some slow traffic where you would expect to find it, that on the Fishhook transition from southbound 17 over to southbound Highway 1. We still have stop-and-go traffic as you get on to that transition, and that's going to continue on to Highway 1. We have some slowing to report in Santa Cruz, northbound Highway 1 at Ameline Avenue. That off-ramp, of course, closed for road work, but no other delays through Monterey, Carmel, or Pacific Grove at this hour. No stalls or accidents. I'm Frank Sullivan. That's traffic on KRXA.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Continuamos here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish we had another hour. Lots of callers on the line. Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. And Brad, before we go back to calls, just two quickies. One, I just wanted to thank you for your support of Sibel Edmonds. We have been doing our part as well. And finally, some material has been published on this side of the Atlantic. The American Conservative Magazine, an unlikely outlet for me. Philip Giraldi is a former CIA officer and a conservative who was on our program the other day. And it's good to see he's paralleling the reporting from the Times of London. And he did name Mark Grossman in his piece, the number three guy at the State Department a few years ago.
He's doing a hell of a job jumping in, reporting on this story. He's reported on her in the past, and I'll give you a heads up. My understanding is that the Times of London will have more on this story coming this weekend.
It's a Sunday sequel there.
Indeed.
Give us a quick update on the recount in New Hampshire, please.
Let's see. Where are we here? Well, I'll point folks over to bradblog.com, where we've got a fresh report today. The Republican candidate, Albert Howard, who had asked for a recount, is once again demanding that the Secretary of State out there allow him to count unvoted ballots and so that they can properly determine and find out how many have ballots were in fact ordered so they can properly determine whether all of the votes that they're counting are the, you know, the correct votes or if somebody has gamed that system. I've got his letter there. We are finding, once again, anomalies in the Republican count as well. Albert Howard is doing a terrific job, and he spoke today. He just got a public records request back showing that there were voting machine, Diebold voting machine problems in 21 different towns.
Mm-hmm.
So the mess continues in New Hampshire. You're only going to read about it, apparently, at bradblog.com. So you can check out my full report from earlier today
and,
near the top of the blog.
And when you get there, scroll down for the Broward County returns. There were 930 voters produced 1,028 ballots.
Yep.
That's 110% turnout there, and that's worth noting.
That's right.
All right. Susan and Soquel, thanks for calling the PBC show with Brad.
Yeah, hi, Peter and Brad. By the way, have you seen the black box voting stuff on New Hampshire and the messing around with the boxes and the sealing and how the tapes come off and go right back on again, the sealing tapes?
Oh, yeah, we've been running some of those videos at Brad Blog. She's been doing it. Bev Harris has been doing a terrific job. They've been on the ground.
Fantastic. Well, the thing I want to say, Brad, is I saw you at the conference. And by the way, Peter, I finally met Billy there.
All right.
Anyway, I saw you, and somebody asked you a question about, you know, how we're going to change things, and you told them to go to the polls. And you, of all people, know how dang dirty the whole thing is and crooked. So, I mean, really, how are we going to get there, Brad? How are we going to produce change?
Are you sure I told them to go to the polls, or did I tell them that they need to sign up and become candidates?
No, you told me we had to get new people in and get the other guys out, but I don't know how we're going to do that.
Well, that's right. And what I had suggested, if it was the panel that I'm remembering, was that, you know, those folks in that room, sign up and start doing, frankly, what the Republicans did 20 years ago and start running for office, running for local office, state office, national office, and take over the damn system, instead of
internally. But I don't think that really can be. I don't really see it as a viable alternative, way of doing this.
Okay, got your thoughts, Susan. Thanks. I want to move along to Valerie in Monterey. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, how are you, Peter?
Doing okay. Go ahead.
I'm listening to Brad. Hi, Brad. It's interesting tonight. You have lots of information that's really important, especially about the optical scan machines.
Mm-hmm.
And you've told people to go to the polls, become poll watchers, and watch the monitors that Deborah Bowen has now established as a requirement. But following that statement, the following caller was told that there's no way to know if it's counted correctly. And I think that's really what the focus should be for the people who are going to the polls, to realize that those numbers on those monitors are not clearly known to be the numbers on the ballots. And I think that it can be very confusing to people if they're watching those monitors and they think that some sort of an accurate reporting that they can count on. So,
all right, Brad?
Well, you're right, and since it's the top of the hour, I'll just give you the quick answer, is that the point is the more people who are out there and who are watching, the harder it is for the bad guys to have their way and for the machines to screw up. We do need people watching, and, yeah, it's still a problem that so much of this is done by secret software and computers.
Valerie, can I send you a DVD?
Please.
All right, hold on. Brian will get your address. Let's squeeze in one more. Ron in Davis. Welcome, Ron.
Yeah, Peter. I want to thank you, Brad, for your tremendous tenacity. And what my position would be, I guess, given the massive amount of, like, what lies ahead of us as a globe and as a country in particular, I really don't see how we can get out of this other than as far, like, if you focus on voting alone, let alone all the other big issues. It seems one way we could do it, we could ask representatives from 10 different democracies to come in and just start looking at what we do, because if you leave it up to us, there is no objectivity. I like your take on that.
Yeah.
Well, if you leave it up to our elected officials who think it couldn't be that bad because it got them elected, then, yeah, we're in trouble. But if the people hit the bricks out there and start paying attention, things will change. In fact, even the Los Angeles Times, in their 2,800-word two-part series, quoted one of the voting machine, longtime voting machine stooges as saying, quote, the election officials can read the tea leaves. The battle has been fought and won by the activists. They didn't bother to quote a single activist in that two-part 2800-word series, but we're winning this fight. We just got a lot of work ahead of us.
And Ron, they did bring in Global Exchange, brought in some international observers for the 2004 presidential election. So
they did?
Yeah, we should do it again. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, Brad, thank you. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, brother. Good luck.
In the meantime, log on to bradblog.com.
Keep smiling until then.
We're talking again with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, I just gave you a nice little chocolate raspberry treat. Can I drink wine and eat chocolate at the same time? Is there a rule against that? Is there a law in France that says I can't?
No, to the contrary. My girlfriends and I sometimes get together and have a treat of chocolate with one absolutely scrumptious wine that we have, which is called Cartagène, which is, again, something that people make in the south of France pretty much for the family. It's a treat, and they pull it out when you go visit them. You know how farmers are and people are close to the land, and they pull out the thing that they've made and they've kept in their cellar, and the foie gras and the special sausage and all this, and they sit around and they share this little treat with them. It's like communion.
Find out more about organic wines at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. Order by phone toll-free at 888-ECO-WINE. Mention Peter B. Collins and see what happens.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. After 52 straight months of job growth, the Labor Department says the economy lost 17,000 jobs in January. President Bush doesn't call it a recession, but...
There are certainly some troubling signs. There's serious signs that the economy is weakening.
Some experts say disappearing jobs are a strong sign of recession. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason takes a look.
At Atlas Tool outside Chicago, Zachary Mottl says his business came to a screeching halt in November.
It was just like the train hit the wall. We stopped.
Now the recession talk has workers like Tim Zarbach worried.
One's in college. One's going to be going to college in 2 years.
But Mottl and many small business owners could be facing hard choices.
We don't want to lay people off, but if it slows down, you got to make tough decisions.
And when workers worry about their jobs, they cut back on spending. Then sales fall. That's how the economy ends up in a downward spiral.
The president, speaking to business leaders in Kansas City today, prodded the Senate to get an economic stimulus plan to his desk quickly. Oil profits in 2007 rose as fast as the numbers on the gas pump. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
Across the board, the big oil companies reaped in the profits for not only last quarter, but for all of last year. The three biggest U.S. oil companies netted almost $10 million an hour combined in the fourth quarter. It's hard to wrap your head around something like that.
ExxonMobil is the industry leader. Its profit last year, $40.6 billion, is a record for an American company. The price of crude oil fell nearly $3 today, settling at $88.96 a barrel. American drivers may have reached their limit with these high gasoline prices. The Energy Department says demand is slowing down. CBS News has learned the government is launching a classified campaign against Internet attacks. Correspondent Bob Orr reports the threat comes not just from terrorists, but from foreign governments.
Computer networks at Secretary Michael Chertoff's Department of Homeland Security have been compromised. So have computers at the Departments of State and Commerce. Hackers have even breached systems at the Pentagon, infiltrating the email of Defense Secretary Robert Gates.
In response, the U.S. now is implementing a classified plan aimed at detecting and preventing Internet attacks. CBS News has learned the president...